2016 is drawing to a close. There's been big events throughout the year, from earthquakes and volcanic eruptions to new oil prospects on the North Slope and surprising interest in offshore leases. Legislative budget squabbles and cuts to the People's Permanent Fund check was of note. A presidential election that surprised and dismayed some and delighted others. What were the big stories that impacted you? We're taking a look back at 2016 and what's on tap for 2017 today.
Today's
on Talk of Alaska.
Underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their homes. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message brought to you by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. I got ran over by the credits there. The last week of December is a time for nostalgia, but it's also an exciting time of the potential for new starts and fresh ideas for the new year to come. Some people make resolutions to exercise more, eat less junk food, watch less television, and read more books. Spend time in actual conversations instead of texting emojis to get your meaning across. I've got the same resolution that I've had for many years, still working to get it right. Joining me to reflect on the year that is closing out and looking ahead to the possibilities for 2017 for Alaska are longtime journalists. Do we have Dermot on? Dermot, are you there? Well, it's the end of the year, and you can't help but have a little bit of technical difficulties every now and then. We will get this figured out. And Dermot Cole of the Alaska Dispatch News, longtime journalist in Alaska, will be joining us from Fairbanks, from our partners at KUAC. And in the studio with me is Tim Bradner. Tim is writes for the Alaska Legislative Digest and the Alaska Economic Report. Welcome, Tim.
Hi, Lori. Thank you for having me here.
I'm so glad that we can hear from you, and hopefully we'll be hearing from Dermot in just a moment. All right, Dermot, are you there?
Well, Lori, I can hear you loud and clear. Can you hear me? I'm up in KUAC in Fairbanks.
I can hear you. It's not a great connection, but we can hear you. So if you can also join us to share your own highlights, if you've got a resolution you'd like to share or there were Alaska events that you want to make sure are noted today, you can give us a call at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. It's hard to know where to start, Tim and Dermot, because there's a lot, as there is in every year. There's a lot of things that are packed in. One thing that I remember vividly from January of 2016 was that earthquake on the 24th. It was the thing that really stood out to me was the sound that I heard before the actual rolling started. I live in Airport Heights, and it sounded like it started off as sort of like a vibration, and then it just got louder and louder. And I thought there was a helicopter above our house. And I said, What's going on? I hope this helicopter isn't in trouble. And my significant other said, that's an earthquake. I said, that's not an earthquake. Well, and that's when the rolling started. And wow, it was one of those times where I thought, it's not going to stop this time. And, you know, we know earthquakes are prolific in Alaska, but every time we have one of significant size, it's a valid concern that it could be has the potential to be devastating. And preparing as best you can is always a wise idea. So have your kits ready, Alaskans, especially in the winter. And if you have a kit, let us know what's in it. Tim, were you, it was at 1:30 in the morning, and I happened to still be awake. Were you?
I remember it very well, Lori. It woke me up. It was a sharp jolt, and as you said, you could hear it coming. It sounded like just a row of trucks coming up the street, and I've known, we live in a wood house, so it sort of accentuated when there's wood. Logs sort of thrash around and make a lot more noise than maybe a different kind of house construction material would, but it was quite dramatic, and went on, as you said, a lot longer than. You know, what worries you is you never know how long those things are going to go.
Yeah, that was the thing to me. There was like that sharp jolt and then just this very strange rolling that just seemed to just go on and on and on. I was watching the bird feeder out on the tree up front thinking, am I just feeling dizzy or are we still moving? And I was watching the bird feeder swaying thinking, no, we're still moving. So lucky for us that it wasn't massively destructive. And, you know, I just think that we should definitely be ready. And as I said, what's in your kit? I know some people are hyper prepared, which is really smart. They have a suitcase ready with extra medicines and, you know, some clothing and things. The thing that I always think about is being dependent on other systems that are beyond your control. You know, I'm hooked up to city gas and city water, and I think, wow, if we have a big earthquake and it's in the wintertime, I'm going to be cold really fast if the gas supply gets shut off. So I've been considering putting in some a wood stove for backup heat, you know, just in case of that kind of event. We also, as part of the year previous to 2016, the president visited Alaska in the latter part of 2015 and went to the Arctic. One of the questions that I had about how that is playing out is what your thoughts are, Tim and Dermot, about what that's translated into as far as action in 2016. Was it a good thing or a bad thing for Alaska to have the president come and focus a lot of attention on the Arctic? It seems that, you know, there's been some policies that have come out that have steamed up our congressional delegation because of that, taking big chunks of the Arctic out of the potential for leasing for offshore, and in a resource development state that's always sort of walked that line between conservation and a love. There's a big contingent of Alaskans that really love the state because of its beauty and want to make sure that those things are protected. And there's also a big contingent in the state that really wants the jobs that resource development brings. What are your thoughts, Tim, about the impact of the president's visit in 2016, even though he was here before this last year?
Well, Lori, I think, first off, I think it's good that any time a president comes and visits and spends the amount of time that the president did last in 2015 is really great. It really, you know, raises our state's profile. And I think it's good to raise the profile of Arctic issues in general. Focuses people's attention on climate change, the needs of research and the work that we have to do to kind of get ready and to adjust for it. As to what happened in 2016, I think probably the thing that Alaskans will remember and are talking a lot about now is how this seemed to translate into kind of a unilateral action, just to abruptly withdraw acreage from leasing in the Arctic. And regardless of your opinion as to whether that's good or bad, or whether OCS leasing in the Arctic can safely be done, or, you know, it can make good, solid economic contributions to the state. It was the way it was done, I think, that really kind of grates on people. Just suddenly, out of the blue, it doesn't appear to be any consultation with the state, or even the affected regional Native corporations, communities along the coast. There was no advance warning of it. So I think it was just, you know, the president was here. He set in motion policies back in Washington, which in 2016 came home to roost in a way that a lot of Alaskans are very concerned about, mainly just the way it was done.
Dermot Cole is on the line with us from KUAC in Fairbanks. Dermot, what are your thoughts about the impact in 2016 of the president's visit to the Arctic in the fall of 2015?
Well, first of all, good morning, Rory and Tim. I hope you can both hear me. I think we have the problem straightened out, I hope.
We can hear you.
Okay, good. That withdrawal of the waters off the northern coast of Alaska was very significant move, obviously. And what exactly is going to take place next when the Obama administration ends is still not clear. I mean, it's not clear whether or not that will be reversed, or if it is reversed, when that will happen. One of the related factors here, there's two. I'd be interested in what Tim, your views are on this. Part of this reflects the Obama administration not really having to pay any political attention to the Alaska congressional delegation. When Mark Begich was a U.S. senator, that was not the case. They did have to pay some attention because they wanted to keep Begich. They wanted to not really necessarily go against him or weaken his chances for re-election. But with the change to the all-Republican delegation again, that really removed that from the equation. And I really think that was one of the factors in this decision and a couple of the others that we've seen come out.
Tim?
Well, that may have had an influence. I have been most interested, though, in what comes next. What can we do about this? And as I understand, the way this was done, it will be very difficult to undo, as you said, Dermot. It could be done by a change, if Congress were to pass a new law that undoes the ability of the president to do this thing, they could possibly reach back and try to undo this thing. But you still, in passing a law, you'd have to deal with a Senate that is closely divided, and you'd need 60 votes to overcome a filibuster by the Democrats. So I think this closure of the Arctic is something we're probably going to have to live with for a while. It just means that there won't be any, it is not going to be any exploration drilling. Keep in mind, though, that they did leave open a narrow belt of offshore OCS acreage immediately north of the coast. So some of that is still available for exploration. There's still some existing leases out there, although they're about to expire soon.
Okay, we lost Dermot, hoping that we can get him back on the line. But let's go to the phones and hear from Matthew in Sitka. Hi, Matthew.
Yeah, Happy New Year and Merry Christmas. The most important thing that's going on, and I think, in here in Alaska is negative. It's the die-off, which is a symptom of what's going on, the die-off of marine birds from last winter. It was still this year. Common muir, the biggest massive die-off in recorded history in Alaska. And then this fall's die-off and winter's die-off of puffins in the Bering Sea. And very, very strange returns and lack of returns of salmon to Alaska's rivers, and particularly pink salmon, which I don't fish, but we had terrible returns all over the state on these fish. There's something going on in the ocean that is affecting all of the ecosystem out there. It's very hairy, very scary, bigger than the president coming to the state, bigger than anything going on in the state, what it represents. And maybe it's global warming, ocean acidification, who knows? But it's very concerning to all of coastal Alaska. But other than that, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Well, that's a very important point, Matthew, and I am glad. We don't want to be a huge bummer today, but it's important to talk about these things because they are valid concerns, and there is a lot of mystery surrounding what exactly all of the, you know, you mentioned acidification and climate change, and it's likely a combination of a lot of things that are adding to these die-offs. But you're right to raise those concerns, because it is something that we don't want to forget about and stay focused on, Tim.
I think these are really important issues, and I think, we have record-breaking warm temperatures at the North Pole at this time of year. I mean, what is the long-term impact of that going to be on the whole weather patterns of the of the Northern Hemisphere? And I think you mentioned two species that are affected. I'm sure there's others, and I'm sure we're going to be seeing a lot of effects on this. So I think what this points to is the need for continued research on climate change and the effects of climate change on, the natural habitat. And I think in this, this presidential transition, I think there's a real risk we could lose a lot of that. So we need to, I think we need to stress to our delegation the importance of doing that and to keep the heat on, so to speak, the new incoming administration, to not lose the momentum that has been built up in agencies like NASA.
Mm-hmm. I think we have Dermot back on the phone. Are you there, Dermot?
Yes, I am.
Hey, that's a much better connection. Fantastic. So I don't know if you heard what the last conversation was. We had a caller from Sitka. Thanks to Matthew. He's gone off the line now. But talking about the concern over the die-offs on the coast of large quantities of MERS and other birds and creatures along the coast. Any thoughts that you want to add to that, Dermot, or should we move on?
Well, I would sort of echo what Tim said. There's a whole host of things that are taking place that need to be studied, and we need to monitor what's going on, because really we're entering sort of a new era in Alaska, and we see that all across the state.
All right. If you want to join our conversation, we're talking about the year in review, 2016, and also looking ahead to 2017 and what's on the horizon for Alaska in this new year. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. That's 1-800-478-8255 or 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, you can call 550-8422, and you can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. One of the things...
Lori, could I just... Austin, before I forget it,
please do
something about the earthquake.
Yeah,
at least the earthquake in January, and that is now. And I was up in Fairbanks at the time and here, and I didn't feel it, but I talked to a lot of people in Anchorage who did, and were, you know, it was really literally a wake up call. But the thing important thing for us to remember, it was not a large earthquake, and so at least by historic standards, so we have to keep that in mind about the potential for much larger quakes in the future, and not to be too negative about this, but that's another reason why preparedness for all of us is essential, I think.
So essential, and it's not, it's just being realistic. It's not being negative. It's being realistic, because it's certainly not if it is when the next really large earthquake hits either Alaska or California or somewhere along the coast that could impact us greatly. And so I talk to emergency preparedness officials often about the urgent need to be ready and prepare yourself so that you can take care of yourself. Because if it's a massive event, you can't expect the government to come riding in and save you, especially in that first few critical days when people who are elderly or ill or maybe have mobility issues and will really need that help. And so the rest of us that are able-bodied really need to fend for ourselves and try to help our neighbors as much as we can, too, in those big events. So I think that that's an important thing to keep in line and to remember. Let's move on to some other things. There were some large oil and gas finds announced by some smaller producers in Alaska. And so what do the two of you make of this? Is this kind of the future of things to come? And how do you view their reports of these kind of large finds in light of the current tax fight in Juneau? How does this all come together? Tim, what are your thoughts about these fines and what it may mean for tax credits going forward?
Well, Lori, the two fines that are you mentioned, one is by a small company, Kalis Energy, based in Texas, which is an independent but run by very professional people with a long track record in history. And they have found a large accumulation of oil offshore in nearshore waters at Smith Bay, which is north of the Arctic or National Petroleum Reserve, and northwest of the Prudhoe Bay, the main oil fields. It's a long way from anywhere out there. And to develop it, they would have to build a pipeline, 100 miles, 125 miles long to connect with the infrastructure. So that in itself is a daunting economic challenge. They also have to find out whether they can, they need to learn a lot more about the discovery. And that's really the case with the other discovery, which has been announced by Armstrong Oil and Gas and Repsol, a Spanish company that's onshore, right really near the Colville Delta. And that's a lot more easy to reach and a lot more easy to develop. But they need to know more about both of these fields. Armstrong and Repsol know more about their discovery onshore because they've actually done flow tests. They know the oil's there. They know they can flow it out of the ground. There's a lot, of course, that isn't public about the economics and about the relative quality of the reservoir rocks and things like that. But that's information just to come. The Smith Bay discovery is really a lot unknown about it. The company is quite bullish about prospects, but it really has to drill more wells, and they have to do a flow test, which is absolutely critical to see if the oil actually will flow. Based on their diagnostics, they think it will, but you never know until you drill and you actually produce it for a while and see how the reservoir behaves.
Dermot, would you like to add some thoughts about the kind of the context of big fines and the looming tax fight?
Well, I think everything Tim says is correct. Some of the associated points here that are worth keeping in mind is that the current tax structure or tax credit structure would have the state on the hook for billions of dollars in development costs for those two fields if they proceed. Really, the both of them would be point to an unsustainable future, and so that clearly has to be changed so that the state doesn't underwrite the billions of dollars in development costs or a large chunk of the development costs before it receives any revenue. Part of the publicity, I think, around both of these is really an attempt to sort of bolster the payment of the past tax credits and the current tax credits, to sort of help build the case as to why the state should appropriate more money to pay hundreds of millions in tax credits that the companies are vying to get. So that there's a current political aspect to it, and that's the current tax credit bill. The second issue is the future tax credit bill if the current laws aren't changed. Remember, the state now owes hundreds of millions of dollars in tax credits that it hasn't paid, and so there will continue to be a big fight over that as long as the state's fiscal situation remains really out of balance.
Tim, did you want to add something there?
Yes, the underlying reality to a lot of this, though, is the state just doesn't have the money to pay these tax credits. Mm-hmm. So I think you can't squeeze blood out of a turnip, so to speak. And if we just haven't got the money, we just can't pay them. And yeah. And I think that's the reality. I think Kalis and Armstrong obviously see that and they accept it. I think that it will definitely color the upcoming session because I think there will be a lot of residual issues that are left over about this. That issue will be still looming out there, but at the end of the day, if you haven't got the money, you just can't pay it. And I can't imagine with the kind of deficits, $3 billion a year deficits, that the public will stand for several hundred million dollars in payments being made for these tax credits. Some other way will have to be found to deal with that.
What do both of you make of the interest in the offshore leases that we saw in this recent sale, both state and federal? Companies came out more vigorously and spent more than they have in quite a while at a time when oil prices are still not all that whippy. So do you think, did they have some inkling that maybe the president was going to do something like take a lot of the Arctic off the table, or are they just thinking 10 years down the road and they just want to get these leases? What are your thoughts about that?
Lori, the strong bidding showing was onshore. It was it was in the North Slope onshore sale. And there was also an offshore sale, and there were some bids submitted in the offshore tracks. These were nearshore acreage and in shallow water and were under the state-controlled acreage. And I think, and even as I mentioned, the president left on the table the OCS leases that are beyond the three-mile limit, but in a belt north of the established oil fields. It's the further offshore areas that he withdrew. But as for the onshore stuff, my take on that is that was mostly, it was good news because just like the Smith Bay and the Armstrong discoveries, it shows that we have really good rocks up here. There's a lot of oil on the North Slope. Question is, can you economically produce it? But that lease sale showed that there's good rocks and there's continued interest. As it happened, there were just a couple of bidding groups that were very aggressive in that. One was a small independent based in Houston were interested in shale oil on the North Slope, and they bid very aggressively. Although they paid minimum bid, they acquired a lot of acreage south near the other shale belt area. Another company has acquired, and so that shows a lot of continued interest. ConocoPhillips is very aggressive in the western North Slope in the NPRA area, which showed that they feel there's continued potential for the medium-sized discoveries they've made out there. So overall, it's good news, but it is just a couple of bidding groups that showed very strong performance.
Okay, well, let's get a quick call in before we have to take a short break. And Don is in Anchorage. Hi, Don.
Hi, how are you doing? I'll try to keep it short for you.
Thank you.
You mentioned something about a book, a good read that one might recommend. I've got one right here in front of me. It's fairly new. It's put out by Brave Down Books over here in Anchorage. And the author's up here in Anchorage. He signed off on this one last week. It is called Deacon's Crossbow. It's a true story of a crossbow killing on Interstate 95 in Rhode Island and in Massachusetts. And it is very well put together. It's what I would call a simple language read. It's not an awful lot of complicated matters. The way he's put it out is very up to date. This involves a Canadian man, and I'm trying not to put anything in here without spoiler alerts. But I found it to be very interesting. It's the kind of a thing you pick it up and you just keep going back to it every time you set it down.
All right. Well, thanks, Don, for a suggestion for a winter read. And I'm familiar with the book, familiar with the author. It is a good read, and he's a veteran. Tim, did you want to add something?
Oh, not to that particularly, but I just want to add something to what Dermot had said, the oil tax credits in the upcoming session. It is going to be a very interesting, very lively session. And I was myself personally, I was hoping for at least a legislature where I didn't have to write about oil tax credits, but I'm afraid that's not going to happen. It's going to be pretty lively.
All right. We are going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about a lot of other things and take your calls as we look at the year in review and look at things like a city barrow that changed its name and what the discussion has been since then and a whole lot of other things, the permanent fund and other things as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. If you have an opinionated teenager in your home who thrives on proving a point, Check out the Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future Scholarship Competition organized by UAA's Seawolf Debate Program. More than $10,000 in prizes will be awarded. Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future gives the next generation of Alaskans a voice in the direction of our state. Contest details available at debatingakfuture.com. This message sponsored by Seawolf Debate.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're looking at 2016 in review and also considering what's on the horizon for 2017. You can join our conversation statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's go to the phones and hear from Helen in Bethel, who wants to talk about a serious issue that's in our state right now. Good morning, Helen.
Morning. This is Helen from Bethel, Alaska. Since a week before Thanksgiving, my family and I sat down and talked about my drinking. So what we did was I enrolled in Goodwood College and graduated. It's very helpful, and my family were mentors and supporters, and I changed my friends and my phone number and volunteering and doing a lot of self-help skills for myself and spending a lot of time with my family and grandkids. And I wanted to talk about a little about climate change. I studied it, and but the reason why we're not getting fish is there's lack of spawning of eggs from the fish, and there's overfishing by big ships, ship liners, the waste in our water, lots of plastic bags and objects, bicycles, other stuff. Plus the climate change from the melting of the Arctic and glaciers and going into the ocean. That's why we keep catching different fish up here that's not supposed to be up here. And we have swallows up here right now, and they're not supposed to come here till April. The warm water is accumulating, and the ocean is growing. And I wanted to talk a little about how our fish comes to Alaska. It starts from Asia. Their fish is cherry salmon. And then the rainbow trout is next, and the steelhead the trout, cutthroat trout. Then there's salmon, coho, sockeye, pink chum. There's lack of spawning that's happening, and the warmth is affecting our animals and our killing off the animals in the Arctic and the pups, and they're going down and going down to the communities where they're not supposed to, the polar bears and bears and foxes and
right. You're covering a lot of ground, Helen, and raising a lot of important issues. I wanted to just say good luck on your sobriety and taking steps to change your life. That's always a great thing to hear when people are making positive changes for themselves and their families and the year to come, and also raising these important issues that impact everybody, how there's a lot of change that's happening, and it's happening fast, and everyone needs to pay attention to those things. Thanks for raising them. Tim, did you want to add anything? Or let's just move on. Thanks, Helen, for that call from Bethel and raising awareness and concern about so many of the both the creatures of the sea and of the land, and how a changing climate is impacting things from both a great distance and right in our own backyards. On the line from Anchorage now is Lance. Lance, are you there? Oh, Lance, we lost Lance. Let's go to John in Sitka. Hi, John.
Hi. A little plug for foster care. I'm a foster care licensed person. I'm an Alaskan native. Me and my sister just got licensed by the state of Alaska. 2016, we started the process of going through all the paperwork and everything for my grandchildren that are in Montana, under the state custody of Montana. And now, in 2017, January 9th, they'll be here. We're going to start 2017 in a positive place where the kids will be able to do whatever they want. You know, they were in a really precarious situation with their mother was using. Mm. I've been sober 27 years. My sister had been sober longer than that. Just a promotion for foster care, how important it is for the children, that they know that somebody out there wants them and will go through all the process of paperwork, background checks, everything. But just the happiness that I heard over the phone when the social worker told them that they're coming to Alaska, the happiness that I heard from them is worth it, worth all the paperwork we had to fill out.
Wow, John, I'll tell you what, this is my favorite call so far today, for sure. Thank you so much for raising such an important issue. And, you know, good on you that you are stepping up to help out your family. I've been a foster parent a couple of times in my life, and it's something that I'm so glad that I was able to have, you know, the ability to be able to help out like that. And we need that so much in Alaska. There is a tremendous need here, as there is in a lot of places, but certainly in Alaska, there's a big need. So I'm really happy, John, that you raised that idea of people considering sharing their homes and their lives in 2017 through foster care. Thank you so much for the call. And Tim, did you want to add something?
Lori, I wanted to just sort of...
Yeah, Dermot, please.
Second what you said, I think we have about 3,000 kids per month in foster care. And the numbers have been growing, and I guess some of the reports link this to the heroin epidemic. Mm. And, you know, maybe a more stronger response by the state. I think that the future of these kids and their future lives will be shaped in large measure by the circumstances they have to live in as children, right? So the adults will be determined by what happens to them when they're younger. And I think this is a real critical problem that's pretty much out of the limelight generally.
And it is so important. You're absolutely right that, you know, it helps all of us to make sure that children have as good an experience as they can so that they can grow into healthy, productive adults. And that's just good for everyone in society as a whole. So that investment that we make of our own time helps all of us in the long run, not just these kids who were directly impacting. Tim.
You know, some good news about this is under the new legislative organization, we have a coalition organization in the State House, and a longtime champion of foster care is in a position where he's, you know, in the majority, he's on the Finance Committee, and this is Representative Les Guerra,
right,
who has championed foster care for years and years and years, and is considered the legislature's expert in this area. But for all these years, Representative Guerra has been in the minority, but now he's in a position of real influence. He still is on the Finance Committee, so I expect there will be new attention to this, state support for this program in the future.
And that would be a good positive focus and a good path forward for 2017. If you have other things that you'd like to discuss with us about the year in review or the year coming up, give us a call, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We also had a big election, and you know, one of the things that's interesting to me is how many people have sort of dodged out of the normal party system and kind of went their own way. We saw a lot of people, you know, we have a president-elect now that for the first time in our history, we have, the nation has elected someone who doesn't have prior elected office experience or military experience. So that's a new path forward for the country. And someone who ran on a very different style of running and a different type of platform. And we saw that with other politicians. Joe Miller ran again this year and ran as a libertarian this year instead of as a Republican. What do you think this may mean for traditional parties in the future? There's been this pretty strong two-party system for a very long time, and we're seeing a lot of people outside of that now and taking new ways. And I wonder if what we've seen in the election was sort of the Brexit of America, where people have decided that they just wanted a kind of a Hail Mary sort of a vote because they're feeling desperate for change. What's your assessment of that? Either one of you, jump in here.
Dermot.
Tim's throwing
you're
it to
first
you, Dermot.
Into the swamp.
I hesitate to draw any sweeping conclusions about any of this because of the sort of the jumbled nature of it, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, the president-elect, to a large extent, campaigned against the Republican Party and, you know, was favored by, you know, was opposed by the sort of mainstream Republican Party, in fact, and he had the opposition of, you know, at the last minute, of Alaska's two incumbent U.S. senators. You know, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote nationwide. Trump won the Electoral College, and you know, in Alaska, Trump won. I guess that was really no big surprise. But Trump winning overall, that was as big a surprise as the Cubs. You know, I think maybe even bigger than the Cubs. But winning the World Series, I don't know. I'm not sure what this means. I guess, you know, you'll find people saying the Democratic Party is in a weakened state. I guess that's definitely correct. The Republican Party, I'm not sure if it's in a stronger state right now, a stronger position now, because of the incredible infighting that you know, produced, you know, Donald Trump as president. I'm not sure what to make of it all. And Joe Miller, I mean, I think he ran, you know, the Libertarian the Libertarian label was available, so he ran. But I'm not sure he's tied to conservative ideas, maybe not the Republican Party. So. And in Alaska, well, yeah, Tim's right. We have a coalition in the House, and a coalition of sorts in the Senate continually. I'm not sure what that's going to mean. I wonder if they're going to if the House and Senate are going to cancel each other out. I'm not sure what's going to, you know, end up with this, you know, because I think the Senate hasn't changed that much. The House has tipped to a degree, but I don't know that the end results are going to be, you know, I think we may end up with a standoff at the end. I'm not sure. So. Anyway, that's my lack of sweeping conclusion.
Well, thanks for treading into those waters, Dermot. I know they're kind of risky waters to start talking about politics. So, Tim,
Dermot,
your
turn. I was happy to let you go into the swamp first. I must say, I don't consider myself a scholar of the national you know, political party scene or even national politics, but it does seem that, you know, we may be at a new threshold where parties, traditional parties, just don't mean that much anymore because, you know, the access to social media and other forms of running campaigns, the importance of radio talk shows and things like that can maybe cut into the traditional influence of parties. That's been a trend that's been underway for a long time, though, and we've seen parties ebb and flow and influence over the years. Just like in Alaska, we've seen coalitions before, and parties are even less strong in Alaska than they are nationally. The old adage that people vote for the people and not so much the party. And, of course, the most dramatic example here in our home state is the independent Governor Walker abandoning the Republican identification to team up with Democrat Byron Mallott to have an independent governorship.
You know, it's a curious thing, but candidates generally, when they're running for office, at least state candidates, they don't emphasize the party label too much, or at least in the past they haven't. Maybe that's changing. But the parties would love to be stronger, and the people who are elected to as party officials always, you know, dream of really having much greater influence than they do. And they sort of portray that. But once people get to Juneau, the party labels seem to become more important. I guess that changes somewhat with the coalition. But you're right, we've had coalitions many times in the past. And, I think it's more reflective of what the society is like.
I think you've both hit on some really important points about the change that we're seeing and adherence to what used to be. If you were a Democrat, you had to adhere to who the candidates were and what the platform was. And if you were a Republican, you did the same. And it seems that especially younger people are making different choices. They're looking more at candidates rather than parties. And we're in sort of this big social experiment with the immediacy of social media and the way that people can share information. And I think there's a lot that remains to be seen about how that will impact traditional politics going forward. Tim, you wanted to add something.
Well, I think at Juneau, too, the you know, how rigid the party structures are in the legislative minority structure is depends partly on the leadership at the time. In this past legislature, Dermot, you can weigh in on this, but in this past legislature, we seem to have had a very sort of strict and tightly controlled Republican majority in the House. A lot of discipline on floor votes. You know, we had one legislator that was kicked out of the caucus because she disagreed with a budget vote. In the Senate, it's much more smaller, more collegial group, but I think you see a lot of fluidity. You see fluidity in even in the Senate, where certain senators, particularly those that were part of the coalition in the previous legislatures, are not necessarily as lined up with the leadership as might be the case. So I think behind the scenes, there's a lot more fluid action than might be apparent.
We're well into now this period in which there's wrenching change in the structure and financing of state government, and it's more ominous now in many ways than it was in the late 90s, I think, because of the level of expense for running state and state government and for local education, and because we're spending so much more money than we're taking in. We're spending from savings about $10, $11 million a day. So we can't continue on that path without making, you know, what are going to be unpopular changes. And that adds the tension. That's the underlying tension really now, I think, that is going to be really in the forefront in next year in the legislature and with the governor.
And on that note, we are going to take one more quick break. And when we come back, we'll take your calls and some questions that we had come in by email as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, supporting Alaska's workforce and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
GCI, keeping Alaskans connected to live the life they choose. GCI is an Alaska-born and raised telecommunications company and a proud supporter of Alaska Public Media. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
We had an email from Tristan in Fairbanks who says that Tristan appreciates the connections between the discussions of President Obama's move to take large sections off limits to drilling, talking about the big oil finds and the impacts of climate change and Alaska's history of boom and bust cycles. To that end, he says, I would be curious to imagine how Alaskans could work toward diversifying our economy together in the next year. If we know the sustainability and climate action will continue to be important, could we build sustainable green industries for our state's future? What actions can policymakers take immediately? Thanks for those questions and those ideas, Tristan. You know, diversifying the economy is definitely difficult in a place as remote as Alaska. It's not like we're going to attract manufacturing here. Tourism, we saw more than a million visitors again this year for the first time in 7 years. So there's prospects there. But we also know that the amount of money that all of those things can collectively bring in is not going to take the place of the big dollar sign in the room, which is what we've made from oil. So we're also looking at the state now has taken control of the development of a gas line, but it remains to be seen how or when that will happen in the future. And a lot of people see it as a big gamble. Tim?
Well, we've talked about diversifying the economy for decades here, and we've never really done a very good job of it. In a way, our economy, if you separate the state government physical structure from the economy itself, we are diversified. You know, we have a pretty healthy oil industry. It could be better. Prices could be better, but they're still producing oil. They're still developing more oil deposits. They're still finding more oil. It won't be a boom maybe like it was many years ago, but it's still steady. We have mines. We hear a lot about mining and new mining development, but our producing mines in the state, as few as they are doing rather well. You don't hear a lot about them, but they're just doing fine. There's some prospective mines that could yet be developed. Mines are good for local communities, local jobs. They can't pay the kind of taxes that oil pays. And the same for fisheries. I mean, fisheries will always cycle up and down. But it's a good, stable resource for local coastal communities, good jobs for the people who work in the fishing industry. But again, they can't support state government like oil does.
No, that's the that's the big task that the governor and the legislature is going to have to tackle this year and in the coming years. Let's quickly go. We only have a couple of minutes left. Greg is in Fairbanks and wants to talk about fake news. Hi, Greg.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for the good conversation. I was just thinking about what they're now calling fake news, and if either of your guests would like to talk about the effect of misinformation on voting and on, how things, what the effect is of misinformation, mass misinformation, and if there's anything they would suggest that we could do as consumers of information to maybe not get misled.
Well, I think, yeah, thank you so much, Greg. Great question. I think that there's a lot that still has to be sussed out and determined about how much impact misinformation may have had on elections and what it means going forward for people and how they should vet their sources. And I think we need a lot of media literacy, especially in schools, so that young people can determine what online is real, what may not be. Dermot, let's go to you for a moment here in our final couple minutes, and what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's becoming easier by the day to spread messages of one kind or another. Some of them are true, some of them are fabricated, and you know, others are sort of in between. This is one of the great challenges for society, for our society in the today and in the future, because this is just going to continue, and it's a real threat. I don't have any great advice to people other than to be wary. It's never been easier to create, just to pass off fiction as fact, and it can appear to be true, and it's just difficult to tell. I mean, in decades ago, and for hundreds of years, I mean, we've had, you know, people trying to spread misinformation, but now almost anyone can do it, and it looks, and it can look to be created by a professional.
Absolutely.
This is a real challenge, not just in Alaska, but around the world, really.
Absolutely. Tim, do you have thoughts about that?
Oh, I think I agree with Dermot. What has really accelerated this, though, is the advent of social media and the whole internet. I mean, mm-hmm. everything just spreads with lightning speed. We've always had fake news. I mean, even in recent years, the supermarket tabloids are famous for people who sit in some closed room and they make up a headline.
It's high entertainment in the grocery store checkout line.
Then once they get the headline, we have to have the story to go with it. So they write up something obviously false. But people, I don't know, people in supermarket checkout lines can discern, I guess.
I hope so.
But these days, it's the acceleration of this through mass communication and the new media that has amplified this problem, made it much more difficult for people to discern, you know, what's true and what's not true.
Yes.
I mean, Tim, perhaps you remember years ago when a North Slope oil well tapped into hell. Do you remember that?
Was that in the Alaska Weekly?
No, it was in the National Enquirer. But
that's right. That's right.
And people knew that. I guess people recognized that.
I remember the front page. It was at Umiat where the well was drilled.
Wow.
And also, it was reported on in the Daily News as, you know, reported in the, you know, no, it was not reported. It was not. But today, things that are almost equally as far-fetched are being passed off as real. So.
It's absolutely true. Thank you so much to my guests, Tim Bradner and Dermot Cole from KUAC in Fairbanks. Wesley Early has been on phones. Ron Zastrow is our engineer. I'm Lori Townsend. Happy New Year, Alaska. Let's have a great 2017.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their homes. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical cost. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message brought to you by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Providing statewide news coverage since 1978, we are the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN, your source for Alaska's news.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.